on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Hello and welcome along to a 105 Sports special here on Cambridge 105 Radio, providing you with the latest update on the coronavirus and its impacts and local sport. Also taking a look at some of the best community stories around the city and South Cambridgeshire. Well, this week we hear from Cambridge Rugby head coach Richie Williams as the club looks set to reach their funding appeal target of £40,000 to help make up for the losses they have suffered during the coronavirus outbreak. Well, Cambridge City have announced they've agreed terms with 15 players now ahead of the 2020-21 season. Pundit Stephen Warren joins me later on to give his verdict on the squad. Now, you may have seen on social media or on the news, a 10-year-old girl called Imogen Patworth-Heidel is attempting 7.1 million keepy uppies, one for every key worker in the country. And in the process, she's trying to raise money for 9 different key worker charities too. It's amazing work. She's managed nearly £5,000 so far. I speak to her and her dad, Carl, later on in the show. And as we continue to bring you the very best stories from the local community here on the 105 Sports Special, the Cambridge University Ladies Netball Club are also challenging themselves during lockdown. They're trying to run 1,000 kilometres between them to raise money for the Cambridge Women's Aid. We hear from club president Carla Hill later on to tell us all about it. So thanks very much for tuning in. My name is Ollie Slack. If you want to get in touch, you can do. Best place on social media, as of course we're still not in the studio as of yet, at 105 Sport on Twitter and Facebook, the place to do so. Let's start with the rugby then this evening, and Cambridge Rugby Club set up a funding appeal target of £40,000. They're into the high 30s now, 30,000s that is, getting close to that target. This is to help up make up losses they've suffered during the outbreak and during lockdown. Also, they had an £85,000 floodlights project, and they've got about a similar £40,000 temporary shortfall on that. So let's hear now from head coach Richie Williams to tell us all about it. Thanks for coming on the show, Richie.
Yeah, no problem, Ollie.
How are you? You good?
Yeah, very good. As we spoke about off air, it's probably taken a bit of time to get into some form of routine, but you know, we've seen this now as a good opportunity to reflect on a pretty good season for ourselves, but also start to plan and look ahead to next year.
Yeah, I find it fascinating talking to sport coaches and sports persons like yourselves, really, in this situation, because you're so used to being outside and with a team and in that environment almost 24/7, and now that's almost completely opposite.
It's been a challenge. You know, at first, it was very difficult not having those one-on-one interactions with the playing group and the management group. But as with anything, we've adapted, and there's some great content at the moment out there amongst coaches where we're able to share and collaborate and share ideas around coaching. So it's been really good in that respect. But again, it's very difficult because we've been taken out of the environment where we're really comfortable. So it's been tough, but as I said earlier, we're really looking forward now to next season and put some really good plans in place.
Yeah, aren't we all? With regards to the actual rugby season, last season and where we are now, just give us a bit of a refresher, really, a timeline of when you first heard the news about the season being postponed, suspended or cancelled, and then to where we are now.
It probably would have been early March when we got the initial decision from the RFU and the government that we'd be put on lockdown, which then meant that we wouldn't be playing the last 5 games it was for us in the league season. The challenge then was not knowing if the season would restart again in the summer. So as you can imagine, that brought with it some really complicated conversations, because the players were expecting to come back in June, July and finish off the season. So in terms of their training and our planning, that made things really difficult. Fortunately, 2 weeks down the line, we had confirmation from the governing body that that was the end of the season and we'd be finishing where we finished off the league, which was in 9th place. The RFU calculated things on a points basis, looking at things like the Duckworth Lewis and cricket, so we ended up dropping down the place to 10th. So it was, in that respect, it wasn't a bad season comparing where we were sort of 18 months ago. So yeah, you know, we've finished middle of the table. There have definitely been some big improvements for us this season. The consistency in our performances have been far better than what it was the season before last. And the majority of our squad now are in place to start back again when rugby does begin for next season.
And with that almost extended off-season period, which you're going to have, I imagine, of course, when the season restarts again, how challenging has that been for the players, especially, really, because they're guys who need to be and probably like to be in tip-top shape?
Yeah, it's different for a number of our players have welcomed this extra time away from rugby just to recharge and reset mentally and physically. But there are a number of our players that sort of crave that that training environment, that day-to-day training. So again, it's been something that we've been mindful of as a coaching team to try and maintain that regular dialogue with the players. The players themselves have been really good at keeping in touch with one another. Our strength and conditioning department have given all the players a program to follow. We've done the same in terms of skill development for the players. But on the same hand, it's really good for the boys to have a complete break from rugby for, you know, a month or 6 weeks. That's what we normally expect in the off-season. The boys would have some time away from rugby, then they'd come back in the off-season in end of May, start of June. So in that respect, there's not a huge amount of difference. I think what it has done is given us a bigger window to upskill the players in some areas where they have been weaker this season. So it is a great opportunity for when we do come back, our players, both individually and collectively, will be in hopefully a far better place.
Let's hope so. We'll come back to the season a little bit later on towards the end of the chat. Let's move on to some of the stuff you've been doing in the community, and many of the community have been helping you, really. You've set up a funding appeal of £40,000. Am I right in saying this was to make up a temporary shortfall on the floodlights project, which costs around about £85,000?
Yeah, that was one of the reasons that the page was set up, but also a number of events, both the club hosting a number of corporate events where the club was booked out throughout the summer, has no longer been able to go ahead. So the money that, you know, we were looking to try and get was that 40,000 mark, and that would obviously help with a few other bits and pieces as well, the upkeep of the rugby club and the grounds. And the position we're in now is fantastic because we're really close to achieving that target of £40,000. So a massive thank you to all the people that have kindly donated to this fund. A lot of the people that have donated are members of the rugby club, but also there's a large percentage of people that have donated that are not members of the club, that are part of the local community. So it just shows and reinforces how lucky we are as a rugby club, probably how unique and how special that we are, because we have that support from the wider public in Cambridge.
It certainly is amazing, really. And what is the exact figure right now? Is it around the high 30,000s?
Last time I looked, I think it was up to about £37,000. So we're getting really close to that target that we set ourselves. And you know, another thing to probably discuss quickly is a lot of our players have contributed to that fund as well. So yeah, it just shows that sometimes when we go through adversity and some difficult times, you see the real sort of character and real values coming through of a rugby club. And you know, I'd like to think that when we do get back to some form of normality for next season, then this experience would have brought the whole club closer together.
And it's funny because I guess when you think of Cambridge, you think obviously the universities, perhaps the boat race, and then maybe the football teams, obviously United in the Football League. But it really shows how massive and important the rugby club is to people of Cambridge, that they're able to put their hands in their pockets and raise such a magnificent amount of money for the club.
Absolutely, and it's probably given us more of an awareness of how important we are in the community in Cambridge. And often when we do go through some difficult times, you realise again how close that we are as a club. It's also a fantastic opportunity for us and the community team that we've got at the club to engage with the wider public. We spend a lot of time, certainly the last couple of weeks, trying to engage with communities in Cambridge that not necessarily have been linked closely to the rugby club. We've reconnected and spent a lot of time and energy investing in our mini and junior team and trying to align the senior section to the club with the minis and juniors. So I think having this extended period away from the playing side of things has allowed us more planning time to actually realise what's important to us as a rugby club and, you know, what we can invest more of our energy and finances in.
So like you said, you've helped, given back as well. You've helped the community. A number of the coaching staff have gone out to help the vulnerable, whether it be collections or food suppliers as well. I guess it's just giving back in some way of the money that they've raised to help you. And like you say, when you next step out on the pitch, whether that may be, it just feels like everything's going to be so much closer together and there's going to be that real community feel again.
You'd hope so. And again, I'm pretty optimistic that the landscape of rugby and sport will change significantly as a result of what we're going through. But in terms of us and our environment, I'd like to think that a lot of the values and the behaviours that we discuss as a, you know, as a first team, and the players discuss about their behaviours, they've now transferred that into the wider world by, as you just referenced there, the players helping the community with the delivery service that we're still offering, having sort of regular conversations with a number of the members of the club. So it's been fantastic to see all of the other sides of what's good from us as a rugby club.
Certainly is. And what impact do you think, other than, of course, the what we've just touched on there in terms of boosting, in a way, the feel of the club, the community feel, what impact, potentially negative, do you think the virus could have on the rugby scene across the country? There's a lot of talk at the minute about the football industry and a number of clubs maybe not surviving because of the industry that football is. How do you feel the virus could affect the rugby scene?
I think there's going to be a number of challenges when we do start back, and as a club we sit just below the professional end of the game. We're reliant on a number of sponsors that invest in the club. We're again pretty fortunate that we've got lots of different sponsors that support us financially, and again we're really reliant on those, but they do support us and they help us with the direction that we want to go in. But I know there's lots of other clubs in the Championship and Premiership that have sole benefactors that invest a lot more money up front than what you know we do as a club. So in terms of stability for us, I think we're going to be in a far better position than lots of other rugby and football clubs. I guess for us the biggest challenge is re-engaging with a lot of the sponsors who themselves have had to furlough members of staff in Cambridge. Again, we're hopeful that the relationships that we've built with all of our sponsors will put us in good stead when we do come back to normal. But I think as a club, we've planned for the worst case scenario. So our playing and coaching budget will be reduced in comparison to what it was last season, and that will be across the board for every club at our level and every club above. But yeah, we were pretty fortunate that we did the majority of our recruitment after Christmas for next season. A lot of the contract renegotiations with the players have been done by sort of February, March time before the coronavirus hit us. So in terms of us as a playing and a coaching organisation, I'd like to think there's a fair bit of stability going into next season, and that's something that we've certainly not had in my time at the club. I'll be going into my third season as head coach, and there's been a fair bit of change in the off season in those previous two seasons. So again, looking at us as a sort of organisation, playing, management, that there's that stability there. But I guess we'll have to be adaptable to whatever life sort of throws at us when we do come back.
And you mentioned every club will almost be in a similar position with regards to, of course, reduced finances and ability to spend money on the squad and reinforcements. Of course, there's also the outlier this year, a strange scenario that Saracens, of course, dropping down to the Championship. There was a lot of talk when that was all going ahead that will have ramifications as well with regards to the Championship, Premiership and the national one below. Do you see that changing at all? Will that still have pretty big impacts? Or
yeah, I think probably in a number of ways, having a club like Saracens playing in the Championship, which is the league above us, will generate a lot more interest in that league. I think whoever Saracens are going to play, it'll be a cup final for the opposition that they're playing against. But again, for us, it just shows that we're not far off from being at that level where we'd like to be at in the future. The big question mark now is, how rugby's going to look when we do come back with the social distancing, with a lot of the other government regulations that are in place. I think it's going to take time to get that sort of normality back to our lives. And rugby as a sport is a collision sport. So there's that regular sort of one-on-one contact. So again, we're just waiting with bated breath to see what the next rulings are going to be from the government and how that's going to affect us and our sport.
Yeah, I guess it's always difficult to speculate when we think it's right rugby should come back, or any sport really, because like I says, none of us are really scientists. We're all led by what the government say. I guess the question turns to, would you as a coach, Richie, and obviously being the man to look after players, feel comfortable coming back into a situation maybe in a few weeks? Maybe as sportsmen and women, you're rushed back potentially where other industries have broken into it slightly more gently?
I think we're in a position now where there's a few other countries and their governing bodies have put a five-step procedure in place. If we look at countries like Ireland and I think Switzerland and a few other European countries, yes, they are probably a few weeks ahead of us as a country and where we're at with COVID-19. But I think that five-step procedure covers the governing bodies' backs a little bit because it sets out initially doing more one-on-one based training, then small groups of four or five, and then after I think 2 or 3 months where the training intensity has increased, that's when competition can resume. So I think the governing bodies and the government will be really sort of diligent in their approach and really sensible about how they're going to structure things. I think for me as a coach and our stance as a rugby club, we will adhere to those regulations from the government. They'll be there for a reason, and I think we won't come back until we know that the players are coming into a safe environment.
I say, what say do you have? I mean, the RFU and of course led by government, could there be a case where potentially, you know, you say, hang on a minute, we're not comfortable with this, and you're able to have your say, or is it literally a case of, you know, whatever the RFU say, whatever the government say, you'll have to comply with?
I think clubs will have to agree to the, you know, the regulations or the guidelines that will come out from the government and the RFU as well. So it'll be interesting to see how quick the RFU will be to producing that document. I'm guessing that it'll be within the next week or 2 weeks where we'll get some form of guidance with what our next step should be, excuse me, as a rugby club. So I think until we get that information that comes out from the RFU, then again we can't speculate to know what we're going to do.
And lastly, let's talk pure rugby then. You mentioned you finished 10th last season. There was the 6-game winning run in the middle as well, which is a fabulous winning run. Is it too simplistic to say the target for next season is just to extend that over a slightly longer period?
I think it would be. And if I look back to last season, it took us, and it was always going to take us, 5 or 6 games at the beginning of the season to gel and have that cohesion amongst our playing group. And we slowly saw when we got to November time, when we started that winning sequence that you just spoke about, that's when we probably saw the qualities of this playing group and how we can trouble most teams in National One. So for us next season, part of the thinking around keeping our squad as it is, but reinforcing in probably 2 or 3 positions will show our ambitions next season. I believe that we're going to be in a much stronger position than a number of other clubs in our league because we're keeping that continuity throughout our playing group and our coaching group. So we're really optimistic and ambitious about next season. We believe that we could have finished potentially 6th or 7th if the season would have gone on and finished at the end of April. But I know that most coaches would have said the same thing as I'm saying now. But no, again, I'm confident that what we've assembled and what we've started to build with regards to our environment over the last 2 seasons will give us a really good opportunity of finishing higher than 10th next season and, you know, getting more points than what we managed to culminate this season.
We'll certainly look that way last campaign. Richie, thanks very much for joining us. Hopefully it's not long before you're all back out on the turf again. And we'll speak again soon.
Great stuff. Thanks, Ollie. Take care.
Cambridge 105 Radio. Sports on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Yep, you're listening to the 105 Sports Special here on Cambridge 105 Radio. Next up, let's talk Cambridge City. And they've announced over the past week or so, a number of players have agreed terms ahead of the 2020-21 season. They started off with 10 players, the real core of their squad, and they've since gone on to name 5 more. So a total of 15 have now signed up for next season. Our regular City pundit, Stephen Warren, joins us on the show to talk about it now. Thanks for coming on, Steve.
Hi, Ali. Yeah, it's nice to speak to you.
And you, how are you doing?
All right, thanks. Yeah, we're missing the football, but well done for keeping going with your show and stuff. And hopefully still talk about it, people still interested.
Yeah, we try to, obviously, because I think it's pretty important to try and keep talking about it because it is so important to so many people's lives. What have you been getting up to during lockdown?
A bit of DIY, actually. It's not the same as a match, obviously. and it makes you wonder what we used to do in the winters. But no, I do miss it. And you're right, you know, it's important. It's a big hole, really, for us and many fans I know across the the area of all teams. So, yeah, just keep trying to keep positive and hopefully, you know, looking forward as a, certainly from our perspective as a club, I think we're doing the right things, trying to sort of look forward as in the safest and most normal way we can. So, yeah, just kind of keep an eye on it and wait, like everybody else, it's a bit of a waiting game.
Yeah, it certainly is. Everything's a bit play it by ear at the minute. With regards to your point of view as a fan, when the season was ended quite early on, many thoughts around sort of March, April time, and the season was null and void, all results expunged. What was your view as a fan?
Initially, obviously disappointed. I think it's funny just given the timing of it, you know, because of our run. I think had we done this in, let's say, January, you know, we'd have had nearly half a season to go, and you probably would have said absolutely fair in terms of there's loads of time left. Obviously, we're three quarters, which makes it the decision, you know, from a fan's perspective, a bit more difficult. I think as time's gone on and the seriousness of what's happened, obviously, in the people's lives, you obviously realise that very much it was the right call.
Yeah.
And you know, look across the board at all levels, you know, it would be absolutely ridiculous if we'd carry on. So yeah, we followed the right protocol as a league. They made a quick decision, which actually, in fairness, I've criticised the league for being slow off the mark with things in the past, and actually they made a very quick call on it. So I guess in that sense, you know, they were decisive. But yeah, just in terms of timing, I think it was just because of our form. You know, we were, I'm not saying we'd have got there because we've had this chat before under that playoffs, but we were on a really good run. And you know, it was a shame that ended because I think we were certainly the top of the form league and you know, looking pretty unbeatable in terms of certainly not losing games and winning 5 out of 6, I think it was, or whatever. So, and the clean sheet run. So it was a really good run we were on, which is a shame that we had that stop. But, you know, look, from a fan's perspective, annoying at the time, but now we've had time to think about it. Absolutely, look, you write it off and quite literally look forward now, I think. And we sort of make plans as we are for hopefully whenever that resumes.
Yeah, one of the reasons why you finished what was the 2019-20 season so strong was because of the fact you managed to get a settled side in the end. And Robbie Nightingale, the City boss, has tried his best to try and keep that squad as settled over the off-season by securing a number of players for the next campaign. I'll run through the list of players who have agreed terms. Mikey Davis, Jordan Gent, Dan George, Luke Knight, Isaac Maynard, Nathan Olakami, Jared Robson, Ryan Sharman, Seb Simpson, Tom Wood, Yort Fusu, Tommy Rigby, Aral Amu, Bradley Gelfard and Ebi Nelson Azzi. 15 players have agreed terms for the 2020-21 season. Steve, when you look at that squad of players, what comes to mind? What screams out at you?
I think it's great news in two fronts because it's only one player that hasn't, to my mind, and that was Tom Gardner, which I would like to see in the team. But apart from that, I think that's really good news. The reason it's good is because, as you rightly said, it was a settled team that we finally got the grip of and got some continuity in the lads knew were happy playing together. And I think the other thing that is pleasing that he found the balance of was kind of youth and experience. We've had a relatively young side. I think we have for a few years because of, you know, looking at, we've always been a side that will breed young players through, give them the chance if they're good enough and come through. And I think you can see that with the likes of, you know, Isaac and now Bradley and stuff like that, and Tommy Rigby starting to get games. But we didn't have the kind of experience really last time. I think Adam Watkins was the leader and he was, I don't know, late 20s. And we didn't have necessarily the kind of experience heads. And now we've got Luke Knight and Tom Wood. I think both of those and Tom Gardner, those three were a little bit more experienced. And I think it just knitted the group together really well. So, you know, that's what I liked. And you can see the camaraderie now towards the end of that run. You know, winning obviously breeds confidence and kind of, you know, positivity. But I think even in the off season now as it is, I've got a friend who does the social media side, and he was saying that, you know, the kind of link between club and players and fans and stuff is strong as it has been for a long time. They do want to play for us. You know, Robbie seems to have got that mentality into them, and I think it came across in the last few games of that season. So, yeah, really pleased because they've earned the right to get deals. My only concern, if there is one, is that when they say agreed terms, it doesn't necessarily mean they've signed forms. It just means that they've sort of pledged their allegiance. Now, I'm hoping that this group will be loyal, but we have been obviously burnt last year when we players have agreed terms and then end up going elsewhere. So there was a caveat to that because I didn't realise that until it was announced. But it is very positive news, and you know, I think they've all earned the right to be there, and they've done very well. And you know, I think there's a bit of a score to settle in terms of right. We've got, if we get a full season next year going ahead, then they've got something to kind of almost prove and cling on to from the year before this season. So you know, it is good. So yeah, very very positive from a fan's point of view, I think. And you know, I hope we can just get them fit and started, and you know, kind of more about the off field stuff, get the season going ahead really, and we go from there. But yeah, very pleased overall.
Well, you mentioned the experienced players. Of course, Robbie has secured some youngsters in there as well. Mikey Davis, Tommy Rigby and Bradley Goff are a number of youngsters who Robbie was keen to get involved towards the back end of last season and now secured for the 2020-21 campaign, or maybe not secured, as you've just pointed out. And Robbie said in his quotes with the press release, he gradually believes the jigsaw came together towards the back end of last season. Looking at that squad now, is the jigsaw complete? Is the work done?
Yeah, as I say, very nearly. I think we probably still need a striker, and that's no disrespect to Arell and Sharman, who both worked really hard and did start getting goals at the end.
Yeah, 9 goals in 31 for Arell Amu and 14 in 24 for Ryan Sharman. Obviously, I think for maybe, obviously, since Joshy Insan left, you haven't really had that player who's maybe got 20 plus.
That's it. That's the thing, I think, is it's just, it's a lot of pressure on those two, you know, and I think that, you know, they did do very well. But yeah, I agree. I think Josh was to kind of linchpin the season before, and you know, every club, I think, in our league and beyond is looking for that 20 plus goal man, and, you know, they're hard to come by. But yeah, I mean, look, if we can get pick up one of those, that certainly wouldn't do us any harm, put it that way. But they come at a price. And then, as I say, I think Tom Gardner made a big difference when he came in. You know, he's just very, very calm defensively. I think he made a really good partnership with Gents and the rest of the back four. So I would like to see him sign. I know he's played at a much higher level, so I imagine he's just holding. I don't think Robbie courted him for a long time, so I'm sure gets on really well, and I'm sure he, you know, enjoyed playing for us. But there's no doubt he could play higher. And I think, you know, it's just that case now of, does he want to take us the next step or try and push us on, or does he get offers? I don't know, but I'd like to see him sign. But other than that, no, I think we're pretty good. You know, I'm sure there'll be many people. Robbie's phone will be ringing, you know, with various agents already, and people, clubs doing, you know, literally as soon as the official season finished, which it did last week officially, as in it would have been normally done by last week.
Yeah.
Then you know, contractually, the phone will ring, you know, for people. So I think it's a lot. Managers are doing their planning as if we're carrying on, and we're no different. So I'm sure he's been, you know, kind of inundated and making plans, and I guess they're probably one or two more, but you know, it wouldn't be overhauled, because I think they say the group you just went through, they've earned the right to start the season again and continue that good run.
Robbie also said in the statement, we only want players who value playing for City. He also said he wants new players who feel pride in wearing the white and black shirt. Now, Steve Gorthrop, of course, a man who you know well, Steve, has said on 105 a lot over the past few months and couple of years, really, that he feels the club have often gone for the best player rather than the players who want to play for the club, or the local players, perhaps, who have more significant meaning playing for the club. Now, Robbie's comments there would suggest maybe there's been a perhaps change in ethos, that they are looking to go for players who want to put on the shirt.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think, you know, look, you compare a little bit to Histon. I don't like to normally, but, you know, they've had a group that are in the main quite local. You know, they came out of the league below together, and they've kept that group. It's a very tight-knit unit. They, you know, they might not be technically the best players. They have a certain style that doesn't, you know, isn't easy on the eye, but it works. And that's because they have a group that have been together for a long time, who are fairly local. And, you know, I think that, to be fair to them, has worked. And we got changed leagues and various outside factors. But actually, you know, I think that ethos probably does. I know Steve, in his day, that was the mentality they played. Mm. You know, it was very much a social group, and it was very much, you know, about believing in the club and having, enjoying your football, basically. I think it's a phrase, and you know, if you enjoy it, and I think that's right. You know, you don't want to be travelling miles, so you don't want local loads of you know, players travelling, and then I think, you know, local and knowing what it means, as I said, about that link between the fans and the club, and I think that's got stronger. So I think hopefully they do appreciate it, and yes, we do. It's sure ones. We do want players that to know what it means, and I think Robbie's right, and hopefully we'll get a couple more that can join that group.
Well, hopefully so. Steve, thanks very much for talking to us. I'm sure it won't be long before you're back at the Glassworld and supporting City, and we're back talking to you regularly on a Saturday. Well, hopefully it's not anyway.
Thanks very much. Cheers. I'll stay safe. Speak soon.
Stephen Wall there, Cambridge City expert or regular pundit on the Cambridgeshire Football Show and throughout the football season on From the Terraces as well. Now, Cambridge City's Facebook page are also offering free advertising for local businesses to try and help them during the current situation. It's a lovely gesture. If you are a local business and you're interested, please go onto their Facebook page, Cambridge City Football Club, and get in touch, either DM them, direct message them, or get in touch in the comments section. It's a lovely gesture they're doing, and worth mentioning off the back of that interview with Stephen about Cambridge City, that they have announced now 15 players they've agreed terms with ahead of the 2020-21 season.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
So let's move on to some of the best community stories that you've heard in and around the city in South Cambridgeshire over the last few days. And as I said at the top of the show, you may have heard of Imogen Packworth Heidel, whether it be on social media or the news. She's a 10-year-old little girl who is attempting to do 7.1 million keepy uppies, which is one for every key worker in the country, and trying to raise money for 9 different key worker charities in the process. And so far, she's nearly raised up to £5,000. Incredible effort so far. She joins me now with her dad, Carl. Thanks for coming on the show, both of you.
Hiya.
Hello.
How are you doing, Imogen? How has lockdown been for you?
Well, it's hard work doing homeschool and doing my keepy uppies at the same time. And I do my work in the morning, and I have to do my keepy uppies in the afternoon. And I also have had a lot of people donating my keepy uppies on my video, and I'd like to say thank you to them.
Yeah, you seem to have so many people get involved. How's it been for you as well, Carl? I imagine, because I know yourself have a full-time job as well, working in the NHS, and then, of course, homeschooling as well, and trying to help Imogen as well with these keepy uppies.
Well, you say that about helping her do the keepy uppies. She can do about 150 more than I can. That's for sure, and that's in one go. Now, I'm busy doing the counting of the keepy uppies when she comes in and goes, right, okay, Dad, I think I've done 2,000, might have been 3,000 or 4,000, who knows today? So we sit there counting them for her, which is quite a laborious task, actually, to be honest. But no, it's been quite hard, really, actually, because, she's had a really fantastic amount of support from people across the country, and Imogen looks at the videos, we look at them, and we've just been bowled over by all the support that she's had, which has been fantastic. And obviously, Imogen wants to reply to everybody, and every time we put anything together, she basically looks at it and goes, right, this is what I want to say. And we're like her personal assistants at the moment, to be honest.
I'm sure they're all important jobs, though, all of the ones you're managing to queue up to. Tell us about this amazing campaign. Firstly, how you set up, how you're trying to raise money for 9 key worker charities as well.
Well, I saw the wonderful Captain Tom on the news walking around his garden, and he inspired me to do something to help as well. So I set up a Just Giving page for 9 key worker charities, and my idea was to do a keepy uppie for every key worker in the country. And Mum and Dad told me there were 7.1 million of them, which is loads. And it's going really well. The support from everyone has been amazing. People have been so kind and saying such wonderful things. And they're really helping me raise loads of money, sending me lots of keepy uppies. To be honest, I don't know how to say thank you to everyone.
Well, you're doing an amazing job so far, Imogen. How many keepy uppies have you actually completed so far, then?
Well, I've done over 35,000 on my own. And people have donated over 120,000, which is amazing. And in total, I've done over 156,000. So only 6,940,000 to actually go. And I've had boys and girls of all ages go out into their gardens doing keepy uppies, even some as the age of 2. And I've had loads of clubs, grassroots clubs, professional clubs of the country to be helping.
Amazing, absolutely amazing. And like you said, it allows so many different people of all ages to get involved. How much money have you raised so far, and what's your target, Imogen?
Well, when I started this a week ago, I sort of wanted to raise £1,300, but we smashed that target. So I raised it to 7,100 for 7.1 million keepy uppies. And so far, I've raised £4,650 the last time I checked, which is really good in a week. And loads of people have donated money, which is fantastic.
That's a terrific amount of money, 65% of the way to your target of 7,100. And Carl, for you as well, it must be, like you say, got so many jobs with keeping count and almost acting like a personal assistant. What were you thinking when Imogen came up to you and came up with the idea?
Well, both Sarah and I work in the NHS, and we knew that there were 1.4 million staff in there. So when she said, "Oh no, Daddy, I don't want to just do it for the NHS. I want to do it for all the key workers," we thought, "Well, there's going to be a lot more than that." And we had to Google it, and yeah, that's when we came up with the 7.1 million. So we just looked at her and said, "Go on, love, get outside."
Brilliant. And Imogen, how many are you managing to complete a day?
Originally my target was 200 keepers a day. And, well, we worked out it was going to take me 97 years to finish this challenge.
Blimey.
Now I'm doing around 2,000 keepy uppies a day, which is a lot better. And it's amazing that every day people across the country are sending me around 10,000 keepy uppies. So if that carries on, we can finish this challenge in about a year and a half, 2 years, which is a lot better than 97, but it's still quite a long time, and that's why I need more help.
That certainly is, but fingers crossed that time will fly by, and especially looking at the number of people who are donating keepy uppies, that time should go a lot quicker. And Carl, with yourself and Sarah as well working full-time in the NHS, how have you found the challenge of homeschooling?
Let's hope the schools open sooner rather than later, because it, the nicest possible way, it is lovely being at home. It's lovely having the kids around, but you know, they need that social interactivity. You know, Sarah and I are fortunate enough that our work has been really helpful for us and able to work from home. But, it's difficult doing everything all combined and all being on top of each other the whole time. And, we get on with it. You know, nothing really to complain about, to be honest. People have it a lot harder than we do, that's for sure. And, you know, the one thing that's really good about what Imogen, when she came up with the idea, is that, she could have said, "Oh, I'm going to do homeschooling, then I'm going to go on my Xbox and I'm going to do this and that," because we're in meetings the whole time, we can't really kind of dictate what she's doing and so on the whole time, and she does her homework and so on. But what actually is good is that the Keepy Uppy Challenge gets her outside, and you know, all credit to her, she's been going in there outside, rain or shine. You even hid in my greenhouse at one point to get away from the thunder and lightning last week, didn't you?
Amazing. And also the benefit of doing a Keepy Uppy Challenge is that your footballing skills will be going through the roof when lockdown is over. Imogen, you mentioned there Captain Tom was your inspiration as well. What was so inspiring about him?
Well, it was really inspiring that he walked around his garden and he raised so much money. And, well, I thought that if I walked around my garden, nobody would be interested because it's, like, really, really compact and small. So since I love football, I decided I could do a keepy uppy for every key worker in the country.
And you did mention you've also had lots of support, and we've seen some famous faces on social media helping you as well. Lots of Cambridge United players who've helped you out. Tell us all about the different people that have got in touch.
Well, we've had some amazing players, and it was like, I'm like, wow. Like, really? And we've had Ben Woman and Harry Darling, which is like, and Matt Holland, Josh Coulson, Sam Squire.
that's brilliant, absolutely brilliant, and it must mean so much, Carl, as well, when you're flicking through those messages on social media, seeing the amount of support that Imogen's getting.
Yeah, it's humbling, actually. It is absolutely wonderful, and everything from grassroots kids who can hardly kick a ball up and down, who are sending their keepy uppies to her. We've had, people as far as the kind of Scottish FA, haven't we, Imogen? The MK Dons, Royston Ladies, you know, and he said, we've mentioned some of the Cambridge United team. Brilliant. And we've even had the
head coach from the Scottish national women's team. And wow. Cambridgeshire and Essex FA have been incredibly supportive, and soccer ability clubs in Essex. And my school has been brilliant, and other schools in the country have been helping as well. And yeah. I've even had support from the England Lionesses, which is so amazing. And it was like really, really shocking at the time.
And I guess it just shows again the power of sport, really, that it brings so many people together, like we said earlier, from all ages and all levels as well, right the way from the top of the game with the England Lionesses all the way down to grassroots helping out. That must be such an amazing feeling, seeing all those different people who all come from different backgrounds helping out. Tell us about the nine charities, if you will. Who are you raising money for?
So we're raising, because my aunt and two uncles are firefighters and my other aunt is a teacher, I wanted to choose charities which support key workers who are keeping us safe, such as the NHS, care workers, police, armed forces, firefighters, air ambulance, and all of the other key workers in the country.
If people want to donate Imogen, and whether it be Keepy Uppies or money, how can they do so?
Well, the best thing to do is go to my Twitter page, where you can find out how to donate. And my Twitter name is Imogen_PH. But if you don't have Twitter, the idea is to go to my Just Giving page, which is called 7.1 million Keepy Uppies for COVID Heroes, where you can donate to 9 key worker charities, such as the Alden Brooks Charity, East Anglia Air Ambulance, and other charities which are supporting the police, firefighters, care workers, armed forces, teachers, and the NHS.
And I'll let you into a little secret, Imogen. We at Cambridge 105 Radio have been having a go as well. A number of different presenters and their families
Thank
have
you.
Been. That's all right. We've been getting involved. And together so far, we've conjured up 714. But what we'll do is we'll keep having a go. We'll keep having a go and we'll total up at the end of the week and we'll officially submit it to you on social media, our final amount for this week. And I'm sure we'll keep going over the next few weeks as well.
Thank you so much.
No problem whatsoever. So hopefully that 714 figure will keep on rising. And you mentioned as well that if you did 200 a day, it'd take you 97 years. Have you got a target in mind when you'd want to complete it by?
So we'd like to complete it within 2 years, because I really don't want to be doing it the next 97 years of my life.
Yeah, and to be fair, Ollie, I don't want to be doing it that long either, because my lawn is already looking the worst for the wear, I can promise you that much.
Well, I'm sure it'll all be worthwhile when Image is an absolutely pro footballer after completing all these Keepy Uppies.
Thank you. Well, she better be after this.
I'm sure she will. Thank you both very much for coming. I really appreciate it. It's been a pleasure talking to you. And can I just say, firstly, congratulations. Amazing job so far for that money raise. Thank you both, Carl and Sarah, for your work at the NHS as well. And stay safe and well. And I'm sure we'll speak again soon.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Special thanks to everyone.
Of course. Well, yeah, go ahead, Imogen.
Well, it's really been phenomenal and everyone's been utterly amazing. And there are too many people to say thank you. But I want to especially say thank you to everyone at Cambridge United, including Mark Bonner and Ben, the women's head coach, and Charlotte Chris, and my headmaster, Mr. Hewlett. And I'd like to say thank you to Billy from Essex Altogether and the women's football supporters and the Kick Cancers Cup. And Ali Banquet in for hundreds and hundreds of Keepy Uppies every day. And I've got no clue how he's got so many football tops.
Well, I'm sure they'd also like to say thank you to you, Imogen, for bringing the football community together. It's been great seeing the progress over on social media over the last few weeks. As I said, thanks so much for coming on to talk to us.
Oh, good start. Thanks a lot, Ollie. Cheers. Bye.
Bye-bye. Cheers, guys. Bye. Cambridge 105 Radio. On Cambridge 105 Radio. Welcome back to a 105 Sports Special here on Cambridge 105 Radio. Lastly then, on this evening's show, let's hear from Cambridge University Ladies Netball Club President Carla Hill. After they've also challenged themselves during lockdown, they're trying to run 1,000 kilometres between them to raise money for the Cambridge Women's Aid. Delighted to say Carla joins me now. Thanks for coming on, Carla.
My pleasure. Great to be here.
How are you, first of all? How's lockdown treating you?
Yeah, it's okay. I'm coping all right, doing my university finals from home, but it could definitely be worse, so I'm all right.
Good to hear. With regards to the netball season, do you see much chance of the new season starting later this year?
Our fingers are really crossed. We're due to kind of be starting up with our Bucks games, playing against other universities in October. But as it is also uncertain at the moment, it's hard to say. But yeah, we're really hoping that we're going to be able to be back on the court soon.
Hopefully. So how did you get on last season then? Did you manage to finish the campaign?
Yeah, we did. We just about, it finishes around March time. So we managed to do all our games and stuff. So we're lucky we had a really great full season last year. So hopefully we can do that over again. We'll have to see.
Hopefully so. Now, the reason you're on the show, of course, is because you've set yourself a challenge to raise money for Cambridge Women's Aid. Tell us all about this challenge.
For sure. So we've pledged as Cambridge University Ladies Netball Club to run collectively 1,000 kilometres in 10 days. And we started that on the 2nd of May, so we're 4 days in right now. And we've already run over 700 kilometres, so hopefully we can really smash our target and raise lots of money in the process.
And 1,000 kilometres, I imagine that's between the squad, is it, of you guys to complete?
Yeah, and we've also got some alumni on board as well. So it's a good group of us, but it's still a long way to go. So we really need all the help we can get.
Yeah, how many different people have managed to get involved so far, do you know?
We've got kind of 40 to 50 people doing different amounts. Some alumni are working, a lot of students are working towards their finals. So some people are doing more than others, but everyone's pitching in really well.
And is this sort of like a campaign that you're opening up to the public to get involved in as well? Or is it almost like within the team itself just and the alumni just to try and get those guys to do it? Or are you open up to the public who can help out as well?
No, it's just, the running is just within the Netball Club and, you know, alumni from the Netball Club. But we're really grateful for everyone that's donated so far. So, yeah, that's definitely opened out.
And what was the target with regards to money in the end that you wanted to raise? Was it £4,000?
Yeah, £4,000, yeah.
And where are you currently with that?
And we're at about 2,600 at the moment. Nice. Yeah.
So, like I said, well on target with where you want to get to. What inspired you to set up the initiative?
Well, there are so many amazing charitable initiatives happening during, you know, this current crisis, and we really wanted to do our bit. And lots of us were missing each other, missing university and sport. So we thought, what better way to raise money for Cambridge Women's Aid than to collectively use our daily exercise allowance to do some good?
Yeah. And why Cambridge Women's Aid? Number of charities out there. Lots of people have tried to raise money for the likes of Addenbrooke's Charitable Trust or the NHS charities. You chose Cambridge Women's Aid. Tell us a bit about what they do and why you chose them.
Well, we chose them because we're really aware that, you know, living in lockdown is hard for a lot of people, but for those who are living with their abusers, it can be really serious. And we know firsthand at our netball club the kind of the value of an empowering and supportive female environment. So we really wanted to stand in solidarity with victims of domestic abuse who are particularly in need during the moment. And Cambridge Women's Aid, they do fantastic work. They have a really specialist service needed now more than ever. They provide advice, safe refuge, one-to-one help, support groups for children and mothers who are really at risk at the current time.
I was doing some research leading up to obviously the chat this afternoon, and on The Guardian it said the UK's largest domestic abuse charity, Refuge, had reported a 700% increase in calls to its helpline in a single day since COVID-19, while a separate helpline, I think, announced that domestic abuse, they'd seen a change of behaviour too since COVID-19, and they'd received 25% more calls after the start of lockdown. It just shows you, doesn't it? Those stats are horrific, really. It just shows you the stark figures. It goes to show why you're trying to raise money for such a worthy cause.
Yeah, definitely. We're really grateful for all the donations we've seen come in so far, and anything that people can spare can really help us do some good together.
Have you had any stories of people who've been inspired by what you're doing or other people are doing, and that's why they want to donate and get involved?
We definitely had kind of alumni donate who really remembered their time enjoying at the Netball Club and realising kind of what good work Cambridge Women's Aid do and getting involved in that. So for sure, I think people have been kind of inspired by it and wanting to help and do their bit, which is really great.
Mm. And as you said, 2,000, I think £700 raised so far of the target of 4,000. Assuming you hit the target, are you going to keep the donations open to surpass 4,000 and keep going on further?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we really hope to surpass our running target. And if we could surpass our donations target, that would be even better. So definitely the window will be kept open.
And have you got a little leaderboard within the club of people who've run the most? Who's clocked up the most kilometres so far?
We do. I don't know if I can get it out right now, but we try not to be too competitive about it, although it's tempting. It's been, I think, really nice for us girls to kind of, in our own way, as a kind of secondary bonus of the task, have a supportive environment with each other, helping us through our lockdown. So yeah, although we are aware of who's doing lots of running, it's great that everyone's doing their bit and helping out, and that's creating a great community for us.
Yeah, I imagine a bonus as well is you get to keep fit during the off season.
Yeah, for sure, exactly. It's great to keep fit, and you know, we all love sport, and it's a great secondary impact. But the most important thing is we're raising lots of money for Cambridge Women's Aid.
Certainly, you're doing a fabulous job so far. They give us the details, how people can get involved, where they can see it on social media, how they can donate as well.
Yeah, for sure. So to donate, if you go to Virgin Money Giving and you type in CULNC, Cambridge University Netball Club, Women's Aid 1,000 Kilometre Run, our page should come up, and that can take you to donations. And then if you follow CULNC Facebook and Instagram page at Cambridge Uni Netball, we're posting loads of updates, photos of us running and tackling the challenge. So that's great to kind of keep on top of them.
Yeah, I'm sure lots of people will be keeping across it then. With regards to the netball season, Carla, we spoke a bit about the top of the interview, but we mentioned pre-season there. What is the sort of plan, sort of outlined in pencil, when you see, you know, hopefully, you know, the season starting to get going again?
Well, we usually have a 2-week long pre-season that starts 2 weeks before the Cambridge University term, in kind of mid to late September, with lots of training, social activities, fitness. And so that hopefully will be happening, depending on kind of what the situation is like. But yeah, that's the plan at the moment, and we'll definitely be preparing for that.
Well, fingers crossed. And are there any financial implications to potentially, if it was to be delayed or even scrapped, we're not obviously sure. Are there any financial implications that could mean, you know, you don't get to play, etc.? Because especially with lots of recreational sport across the county and the country at the minute, that is, you know, at the forefront of people's mind, is if the lockdown continues and they may have to put off the sport for a season, it may have real bad financial implications for them. Is that similar with you guys at the university playing netball?
Well, I think for sure, I mean, you know, a lot of our expenses go towards court time, umpires, kits. So that's the kind of thing that we will be uncertain whether or not we'd have to pay for it if we were playing in a university league or not. But definitely, I think it would be a challenge. But we're really grateful to have sponsors and things helping us. So yeah, our fingers are crossed it can go ahead, because it would definitely be good for us financially.
Well, hopefully you can get back playing pretty soon. And all the best as well with the money raising as well towards Cambridge Women's Aid. Carla, thanks so much for joining us. And
thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
Cheers. Cambridge.